Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the L.A. Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we've got a whole lot of news for you. And it's going to be some interesting stuff. I'm going to start off with my first article tonight. Obama family spends more than the Queen on travel. The Obamas are spending $1 billion a year on luxurious travel and vacations, all paid for by hardworking Americans. Imagine that.
I believe it.
Yeah. I mean, without precedent is how one member of Congress describes it. Another member announced it as nearly unbelievable. No, they weren't talking about the latest Obama girls outing to China. They were talking about the more than $1 billion spent on travel every year by Obama and his family. $1 billion. Can you imagine that? Or as Britain's Daily Mail reported, Obama is spending 20 times what the entire royal family spends for travel. A sort of luxury. Please don't.
Well, you didn't say it right.
That sort of luxury and excess would make the sovereigns of any European nation wince. The latest trip to China includes all the must-see sites, such as the historic city of Xi'an, the southern district of Chengdu, and the home of China's beloved panda bears. Obama's American taxpayers should be in open revolt as they're footing the bill for this opulence and grandeur. Adding insult to injury is the simple fact that Michelle Obama won't answer a single question about the entire trip, and still we're paying the freight. Want to finish? When the Obamas travel, they never seek to lower the bill. They stay at the finest private homes, rented for top dollar, or they check into the most luxurious resorts. Figures and details are often hard to obtain, but the Washington Post estimated that the Obama June 13, 2013 sojourn to Africa cost taxpayers $60 million to $100 million. The legendary size of the entourage forced the government to pay for 4,000 room nights for the single 4,000 room nights with a single top stop in Johannesburg, South Africa. They also rented a mind-boggling $2 million worth of cars that must have been nearly every auto in town.
Back home, Obama keeps a 747 at his disposal, ready to take off at a moment's notice. He used the plane so frequently that the White House had to expand the number of pilots available since Obama was elected. As Andrew Malcolm reported in the Los Angeles Times, at an Air Force estimated cost of $181,757 per flight hour, not to mention the additional travel costs of Marine One, Secret Service, logistics, and local police overtime, that's a lot of frequent flyer dollars going into the president's carbon footprint. The perks of the office don't end with a plane either. Not only does the White House have a theater, they have a projectionist available on standby 24 hours a day, chefs, gardeners, and personal trainers available for any family member at a moment's notice. Bored with the movie? How about a party? The Obamas have thrown the most ostentatious party in White House history, including Michelle Obama's infamous 50th birthday party. Beyonce headlined the party, but it included musicians like Johnny Legend, Stevie Wonder, Smokey Robinson, Jennifer Hudson, James Taylor, Gladys Knight, and Mary J. Blige. Celebrities lined up to attend, including Magic Johnson, Samuel L. Jackson, Rachel Ray, Billie Jean King, and Al Roker.
I hope they didn't have to pay for all these people to attend.
Meanwhile, our defense budget and foreign policy are in shambles. Our economy is sputtered and sank while Obama has been in the office. Deficits are out of sight. Obamacare is on the ropes. Yet our first family parties and lives large, passing the cost off to the hardworking Americans. It's no wonder that Obama's popularity is in the toilet. I agree with that.
I thought that was amazing, though. Right? All this damn money and this recent flight that nobody knows what the hell she's even doing over there. You know?
Yeah. It's like it's none of your business.
Yeah.
And we're paying for it.
Yeah. There are only 9 countries left in the world without Rothschild central banks. Russia, China, Iceland, Cuba, Syria, Iran, Venezuela, North Korea, and Hungary.
Isn't it funny that we are always at war with these countries?
Yeah. Amazing, huh? Okay. Our first lady is grinding in front of high school boys. This was so freaking amazing. There's a picture here of this of Miss Obama standing like a hooker on a stage show, you know, spread leg over the head of some poor little guy dancing. This is really sick. Really sick thing. And it turns out, you know, this is an interesting story because it turns out the Rothschilds and Harry.
I read that. Yep, that's from.
Can I read this?
Yes, that was on David Icke.
I know, but it's still an amazing story. All right. Turns out the Rothschilds, inherit a semiconductor patent for free-scale semiconductors because of the people that died on this 370 plane that went down in the Indian Ocean there. The disappearance of 4 members of a patent semiconductor traveling on Malaysia Airlines MH370 makes the famous billionaire Jacob Rothschild the sole owner of the important patent. The mystery surrounding the Malaysian Airlines MH370 is growing as each day passes, with more mysterious silence shadowing the disappearance of the airline. More and more conspiracy theories are beginning to boom on the internet. One of the conspiracies, one is the free-scale semiconductor ARM microcontroller KL03, which is the new improvised version of an older microcontroller KL02. Okay.
Well, it's a little complicated.
This crazy story about how Illuminati Rothschild exploited the airlines to gain full patent rights of an incredible KL-03 microchip is going haywire across the internet, especially when it involved Jacob Rothschild as the evil master plot. A U.S. technology company, which has 20 senior staff on board Malaysia Airlines flight MH370, it just launched a new electric warfare gadget for military radar systems in the days before the Boeing 777 went missing. Freescale Semiconductor has been developing microprocessors, sensors, and other technology for the last 50 years. The technology it creates is commonly referred to as embedded processors, which, according to the firm, are standalone semiconductors that perform dedicated computer functions in electric systems. Why are so many Freescale employees traveling together? What were their jobs? Were they on a mission? And if so, what was the mission? Can these employees be the cause of the disappearance of the plane? Could the plane have been then hijacked and these people kidnapped? Did these employees hold valuable information? Do they have any valuable cargo with them? Did they know the company and technological secrets? Which, with all the might of technology, why can't this plane be located? Where is this plane, and where are these people? The 20 Freescale employees, among 239 people on flight of MH370, were mostly engineers and other experts working to make the company chip facilities in Tianjin, China, and Kuala Lumpur more efficient. Said Mitch Hawes, Vice President of Global Communication Investments Relations. These people with a lot of experience and technical background, and they were very important people, Hawes said. It's definitely a loss for the company. In Malaysia, Freescale Modern Operation Facility that manufactures and tests integrated circuits is based in Petaling, Jaya. Okay. But important thing is, based on information obtained from Freescale website, the facility began operations in 1972, covering an 8-hectare site and is specifically designed for the manufacturing and testing of microprocessors, digital signal processors, and interrelated integrated radio frequency circuits. It also owns Freescale RF, which is involved in creating solutions for aerospace defense listed below. Well, battlefield communications, avionics, HF radar, missile guidance, electronic warfare, and identification friend of foe. This sucker goes on a ways, but the problem is that all of this stuff, Freescale's shareholders include the Carlyle Group, or of private equity investors without past advisors, have included U.S. President George Bush Sr. and former Prime Minister John Major. The fact that Freescale has so many highly qualified staff on board the 777 had already prompted wild conspiracy theories about what might have happened. The company says they were flying to China to improve the consumer operations, product operations, but Freescale's fresh links to electrical warfare technology is likely to trigger more speculation. This article goes on. I'm going to advise you to go to it. And it's called the Patriot Net Daily. Rothschild inherits a semiconductor patent for Freescale semiconductors. Patriot Net Daily. Check that one out, folks.
Well, here's something interesting from Red Flag. Something is about to happen. For the first time in history, Israel suspiciously closes all embassies and consulates worldwide.
What's that? Israel?
Mm-hmm. We'll put on this video below and see what. Listen to the audio part.
Israel closed all the consulates.
March 23rd, 2014. And I pay close attention to what's going to take place here for the next coming days. I always state that it's wise to keep an eye on the actions of these world powers.
I have
realized that.
We're sorry, folks. This is not working out too well there. So
now they're giving the excuse that the foreign ministry members are complaining that they have not been getting paid enough, and I can tell you right now that's garbage. And that they're going on strike. So they're blaming this whole thing beginning today, March 23rd, on a big strike. I'm not buying it. At the same time, Israel vows to further destroy those who plan to carry out attacks against the Jewish state. This is the first and only country that I've seen or heard of thus far that has took any preparations against this missing Flight 370. Some say paranoid, some say connected. Well, I can tell you this much. If every single Israeli leaves their post worldwide, that isn't good. It's a sign. I don't know what they have up their sleeve, if they have an attack coming on another country, if they see something's about to break loose, but this is the perfect guise and the perfect excuse and reason to bring everybody home and get everybody out of every other country. They're doing it right now.
So that's something that's happening, and they're saying it's because of a strike.
I'll keep you guys updated, but I just wanted to put it out there.
This particular person thinks there's a reason behind all of it, not the reason that's been posted. And the reason that's been posted is there's a strike because they're not paying their people enough. So,
yeah,
So he suspects there's something else going on. Because he feels there's always a hidden reason behind things.
Wish he had more evidence and more information on that. But
well,
according to that, he doesn't make any sense. So therefore,
that isn't true,
know.
Leo.
Yeah.
He said that he didn't listen.
I did. Of course, nobody else could hear it. But let's see.
Well, here's this. The New York uses toll tags to track motorists. New York traffic agencies are tracking motorists across the state by connecting to their toll tags mounted to their windshields, even when the drivers are nowhere near a toll booth. Both the New York Department of Transportation and Transcom, a traffic management agency, admitted that for nearly 20 years, they have been using antennas to connect to the EasyPass toll tags in vehicles driving across more than 3,000 miles of public non-tolled roads, not just in New York, but neighboring states as well. We're being watched in ways I think none of us would have imagined, said Donna Lieberman, the executive director of the New York Civil Liberties Union. It's happening without any public scrutiny, without any decision that's consistent with checks and balances. So, you think the Easy Pass is convenient? Probably is, but you give up your freedom as a result of it. A privacy advocate discovered the massive size of the program after he created a device that alerted him every time his toll tag connected to an antenna. I took my Easy Pass and figured out how to let me know when it was transmitting. Then I reverse engineered the Easy Pass protocol radio. Even when he drove down roads nowhere near a toll booth, his device went off multiple times. He realized that the agencies were purposely installing toll tag readers hidden under regular traffic signs to track drivers as they drove. Not surprisingly, the Easy Pass terms and conditions say nothing about the tracking program, which was not previously announced to the public. New Yorkers have the right to know what purpose is, whether it's improper, and the right to insist that our elected officials rein in this practice. Unfortunately, elected officials across the country are doing just the opposite. As we reported in January, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is pushing for new vehicles sold in the U.S. to be equipped with vehicle-to-vehicle communication systems, known as V2V for short, which would allow them to talk to each other through GPS data under the guise of accident prevention. An official at the Government Accountability Office even said the V2V could be used to track individuals. Privacy is a real challenge, he stated, but bureaucrats are completely unconcerned about privacy, especially if violating it means additional revenue from taxi drivers for every driven mile, from taxing drivers for every driven mile. And these surveillance programs aren't just limited to private vehicles. Well, last week, New York Metropolitan Transportation Authority announced its plan to install thousands of audio and video recorders on its commuter trains. So that's already here, folks, and we didn't even have a chance to say, no, we didn't like it, or we don't want it. We had it anyway.
Cocaine. Custom officials intercept shipment of cocaine on its way to the Vatican.
To the Vatican, yeah.
German custom officials have intercepted a package addressed to the Vatican containing 14 condoms filled with cocaine. A government spokesman said a box filled with 340 grams of the drug, valued at 40,000 pounds, or lira, or whatever it was seized in January at the International Airport in the eastern city of Leipzig. The cocaine posted for an unnamed South American country was in liquid form. It has been poured into the condoms and placed in the package addressed to the main postal center at the Vatican. Authorities handed the parcel to a Vatican police officer with the aim of laying a trap. but the box was not claimed. German investigators believe the intended recipient remains unknown and was tipped off about the interception. The Vatican Office of Interpol was working on the investigation of the Leipzig prosecutor's office, which could not be reached for comment. Interesting, huh? Maybe I wouldn't surprise me if the Pope was doing coke. You know what I mean? Like, he kisses feet and stuff like that. He's into stuff. Right. Hey, guess what, folks? J.P. Morgan said probably the most horrible, miserable son of a bee of a company that ever existed. That's $10.4 billion on the early death of its workers.
Isn't that
sick? Families of young J.P. Morgan workers who have experienced tragic deaths over the last 4 months have kept in the dark on many details, including the fact that the banks most likely held a life insurance policy on their loved one, payable to itself. Banks in the U.S., as well as other corporations, are allowed to make multi-billion dollar wagers that their profits from life insurance companies on employees will outstrip the cost of paying premiums and other fees. Early deaths help those wagers pay off. According to the December 31st, 2013 financial filing known as the Cal Report that J.P. Morgan made with federal regulators, it has tied up $10.4 billion in illiquid long-term bets on the death of a large segment of its employees.
They were doing that before, so that's not new.
Well, it's new to me because I never read it before. And guess what? It's a freaking horrible thing to do. Can you imagine that? No? You think that's right? Well, let's do it to everybody. You know? The program is known among regulators as bank-owned life insurance, or BOLI. Federal regulators specifically exempted BOLI in passing the final version of the Volcker Rule in December of last year, which disallowed most proprietary trade of betting on the house. Regulators stated that these accounts permit the banking entity to effectively hedge and cover costs of providing benefits to employees through insurance policies related to key employees. We have italicized the word key because regulators know very well from financial filings that the country's mega banks are not just insuring key employees, but a broad base of their employees. All right? The amazing thing is we found out about this, I don't know how many years ago, 4 or 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
maybe more. We were on an FM show that what these companies were doing was the same that the government was doing, and they were insuring the vets, okay, that they would
mm-hmm.
die, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Betting on veterans.
Or an early death.
Yeah, and collecting a premium.
Right.
And it was pretty sick. And they weren't paying the families.
So they were
keeping collecting
it.
The money. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's just a sick freaking bunch of people, man, these banking bastards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just four of the largest U.S. banks, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup, hold over $53 billion in investments in BOLI, according to 2013 year-end call reports. Death benefits from life insurance is purchased at a multiple to the amount of the investment, meaning that $53 billion is easily enough to buy 1 million life insurance policies on 159,000 employees, and potentially a great deal more. Industry experts estimate that the total face amount of life insurance held by all banks in the U.S. on their employees now exceeds $500 billion.
That's a good investment.
Right. Yeah. When the General Accountability Office looked into the matter for Congress in 2003-2004, it found that the insidious practice of continuing the life insurance even after the employee had left the company, nullifying any ability to consider him or her key to the business. The GAO wrote, unless prohibited by state law, businesses can retain ownership of these policies, regardless of whether the employment relationship has ended. And the GAO found that the multiple companies held life insurance policies on the same individual. holy cow. In 2006, Congress passed the Pension Protection Act, which included a section on these policies. Instead of outlawing BOLI and its corporate sibling, corporate-owned life insurance, or COLI, Congress grandfathered all of the millions of previously issued policies while tweaking a few tax and reporting rules. One bedrock of insurance law dating back to the 19th century is that a party must have an insurable interest in the life of another person in order to take out an insurance policy. The U.S. Supreme Court held in Warnock v. Davis in 1881 that in all cases there must be reasonable ground founded upon the relation of the parties to each other, either pecuniary or of blood or affinity, to expect some benefit or advantage to the continuance of the life of the insured. Otherwise, the contract is mere wager, by which the party taking the policy is directly interested in early death of the insured. Such policies have a tendency to create a desire for the event. They are, therefore, independent of any statute on the subject, condemned and being against public policy.
So there's new meaning to you have to take a physical, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Before you get this job, you have to take a physical. It makes you wonder if they only hire people they know aren't going to have a long life.
Not going to live, yeah, you know.
Hidden disease,
we'll hire this one. Oh, yeah, put him on a high-pressure job, you know. Well, it is highly questionable that rank-and-file employees are key to the success of a business. There is questionably no doubt, no question, that their contribution to business ends when their termination, when they terminate their employment. And yet somehow banks are allowed to collect death benefits on terminated employees right under the nose of state insurer regulators. And the explanation is likely the secrecy which surrounds these policies, limiting knowledge of death benefits to just the bank and the insurance company. So they insure you while you're employed, and then when you leave, they keep you insured, and then when you die, they collect on you. One reason banks are enamored with taking out policies on other people's lives and keeping the practice as hush-hush as possible with the willing consent of regulators is that the gullible U.S. taxpayer who bailed out the banks to the tune of trillions of dollars in 2008 to 2010 and is now subsidizing too big to fail through an implied permanent federal backstop is also subsidizing his death wagers. Both the buildup in the cash value of policies over time and the payment of the death benefits are tax-free income to the bank. And the more workers they insure, the more tax-free income they receive to help their bottom line. And thus corporations pay in their share of federal income taxes, shifting more and more of the burden to the struggling middle class. Banks have also exploited other tricks with the billions invested in these policies. J.P. Morgan is the assignee for patent number 55,806,42. As the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office titled System for Designing and Implementing Bank-Owned Life Insurance with a Reinsurance Option. Noteworthy features of this scheme include the following. Purposes of the consent requirement and statutory requirements for insurable interest are to ensure that a bank does not take out a death benefit policy on the life of an employee which exceeds the bank's loss. In general, a bank may take out a death benefit policy in the amount which is multiple of 8 to 10 times the annual compensation of that employee.
And it goes on.
It's just amazing. So, you know, it's amazing the fraud that we've been allowing here. Go to Wall Street on Parade. Wall Street on Parade, and check that out. That article. It's really sick. It is really absolutely sick.
And here's one from Altanet. Overwhelming evidence that half of America is in or near poverty. The Charles Koch Foundation recently released a commercial that ranked a near poverty level $34,000 income family among the top 1% of poor people in the world. Bud Konheim, CEO and co-founder of fashion company Nicole Miller, concurred. The guy that's making, oh my God, he's making $35,000 a year. Why don't we try that out in India or some countries we can't even name, China, any place, the guy is wealthy. Comments like these are condescending and self-righteous. They display an ignorance of the needs of lower-income and middle-income families in America. The cost of food, housing, and education, health care and transportation, child care, and taxes have been well-defined by organizations such as the Economic Policy Institute, which calculated that the U.S. family of three would require an average of about $48,000 a year to meet basic needs, and by the Working Poor Families Project, which estimates the income required for basic needs for a family of four is about $45,000. The median household income is $51,000. The following discussion pertains to half of America that is in or near poverty, the people really seen by Congress. Number one, the official poverty threshold should be much higher. According to the Congressional Research Service, the poverty line reflects a measure of economic need based on living standards that prevailed in the 1950s. It is not adjusted to reflect changes in needs associated with improved standard of living that we have occurred over the past decade. The original poverty measures were and still are based largely on food costs of the 1950s, but while the food costs have doubled since 1978, housing has more than tripled, medical expenses are six times higher, and college tuition is 11 times higher. The Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Census Bureau have calculated that food, housing, health care, child care, transportation, taxes, and other household expenses consume nearly the entire median household income. CRS provides some balance, noting that the threshold should also be impacted by safety net programs. For the purposes of officially counting the poor, non-cash benefits such as the value of Medicare, Medicaid, public housing, and near-cash benefits are not counted as income, like food stamps. But many American families near the median are not able to take advantage of those safety net programs. Almost all, on the other hand, face the housing, health care, child care, and transportation expenses that point toward a higher threshold for poverty. Almost half of Americans own, on an average, nothing. The bottom half of America owns just 1.1% of the country's wealth, or about $793 billion, which is the same amount owned by the 30 richest Americans. Zero wealth is owned by approximately the bottom 47%. The non-existent net worth is due in a great part to the overwhelming burden of debt for Americans, which now includes college graduates entering the workforce. Number three, half of Americans are poor or low income. This is based on the Census Department's relative poverty measure, which is most commonly used in developed countries to measure poverty. The Economic Policy Institute uses the term economically vulnerable. With this standard, 18% of Americans are below the poverty threshold, 32% are below twice the threshold, putting them in the low-income category. The official poverty rate increased by 25% between 2000 and 2011. Seniors and children feel the greatest impact, with 55% of the elderly and almost 60% of children classified as poor or low income. Wider opportunities for women report that 65% of women aged 65 or older who live alone or live with a spouse have incomes insufficient to cover basic daily needs. It's much worse for black families. What? Nearly half of American, incredibly, white families' total wealth has risen from $12 trillion to $77 trillion in 25 years. Excuse me, I just had to take a drink of water. The median net worth for black households has gone down over approximately the same time, from $7,150 to $6,446. The State of Working America reports that almost half of black children under the age of six are living in poverty. Number five, nearly half of American households don't have enough to hold them for 3 months. That's according to the Corporation for Enterprise Development. Even more striking, a survey by Bankrate.com concluded that only one in four Americans has 6 months' worth of expenses for use in an emergency. It would be much worse without the safety net. The Center on Budget and Policy Priority estimates that without food stamps and other safety initiatives, the poverty rate would double. The economist Jared Bernstein qualifies the importance of Social Security, arguing that without retirement benefits, the elderly poverty rate would be five times the current state. The Koch Foundation and Mr. Kornheim need to look beyond their own circles of privilege before making insulting comments about the lower income half of America, which they do.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's pretty devastating news, isn't it?
But you know what? Here's something else. You know, Mr. Obama, as much as I really dislike this thing. This Obamacare obstacle, cancer clinics are becoming inaccessible.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, here it is. I'll play this piece.
The president has long promised that Obamacare will benefit the sickest Americans who need it most. If you get cancer, you are 70% more likely to live another 5 years if you have insurance than if you don't. Think about that. That is what it means to have health insurance. It's very clear there. Obamacare is supposed to be helping cancer patients. But a new survey shows that only 4 of 19 nationally recognized comprehensive cancer centers said patients have access through insurance companies in their state exchanges. In other words, some hospitals are off limits. How is that possible? Dr. Mark Siegel is a member of the medical aid team and joins us with this news. This is very troubling. Some of the best places in America for cancer treatment simply are unavailable to people on those policies.
And that's no surprise at all. That came from a survey from AP that you just showed. You know why? Because they have state-of-the-art, top-flight treatments.
Mm-hmm.
They're the most expensive. They target certain cancers. They work for some people, not for others. Avastin is a drug that costs over $90,000 a year. If an insurance company has to cover birth control or has to cover mammograms, they're not going to be able to stretch to cover the treatments at MD Anderson. MD Anderson, less than half of the plans in the state of Texas cover it. In New York,
MD Anderson is one of the best. It is, I think, the top-rated cancer hospital in the country.
I agree with that. Here are a couple others. Here in New York, Sloan Kettering Memorial, 2 out of 9 of the major plans in New York State cover cancer treatments at Sloan Kettering. Seattle Cancer Care Alliance, same problem. Less than half of the plans cover it.
And now, if you have cancer, you want to go to one of those three places, but they're off limits if you have certain Obamacare policies.
Absolutely. And so what are you going to do? You're going to, and then, by the way, Steve, that's the first thing my patients will say if I give them a cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Where do I go for the best treatment in the country? And where's the best doctor? And oftentimes, the secret is it's at one of these centers. Now, here's another secret. We actually got an email over the weekend from someone that didn't even know we were doing this segment today. So to Harry Reid out there, I say, this is totally real. We're not just saying this here on the news. I got an email from someone in the state of Delaware,
okay,
who said the Coventry plans in Delaware, which are 8 out of the 19 plans, don't cover chemotherapy, radiation therapy, or infusion. So even if you go to one of the major cancer centers, the treatment you need may not be covered. So you know what happens, Steve? You pay out of pocket for it. It doesn't count towards your huge deductible that you have. So you might have a $6,000 deductible. You end up paying for your own chemotherapy. It doesn't count towards the deductible in the state of Delaware with these Coventry plans.
And that was an email from a woman by the name of Heidi, who Harry Reid, as you pointed out, would call a liar. But nonetheless, it's very troubling because if she's faced with this cancer diagnosis and her plan doesn't cover it, what are you supposed to do?
You're out of luck. And if you go
to a pharmacy
and you go to pay for one of these things, by the way, there's something called specialty drugs. You go to a pharmacy, you go to pay for your own chemotherapy, there's a 50% co-insurance, meaning that 50% of the time you're going to be 50% of the amount is coming out of your pocket. So what are we looking at here? In summary, you may not be able to go to the top cancer centers in the country.
Right.
If you go there, your plan may not cover the treatment you need. And if you go to the pharmacy, you're going to end up paying for half of it out of pocket. You're going to, the bank is going to be broken as you try to treat your cancer with our top treatments. These days, Steve, we have targeted therapies that are revolutionary, that are curing cancer like never before. People are not going to be able to get it under Obamacare. But you know what? They'll get their birth control pill paid for.
Yeah, no kidding. So if you like your cancer doctor, you might not be able to keep your cancer doctor.
Or your plan, or your center.
All right. Dr. Mark Siegel, thank you very much.
Good to see you.
Huh?
All right.
Anyway, you know, this is so difficult. It's so sick.
Why don't we play that music break?
Yeah.
We'll have a little fun.
You know, if you want total security, go to prison. There you're fed, clothed, given medical care, and so on. The only thing lacking is freedom. And that was from Dwight Eisenhower. Yeah. Okay, let's, a friend of ours, Warren Bull, sing the Freedom Song. Let's see what he, how he, I'll get this one.
We'll take a little break with it.
Yeah, he sent this to us. He's one of the major guys on, for Normal and, legalization of marijuana in the United States. I don't think I'm going to get this played. There you
go. And I remember you in Saturday. Battles we won, 15 states. Here to the things we've done, to the things we do to keep it true.
That one over, it's kind of like Can I play one more of it?
Yeah, I'll play one more.
Herbal the Hunter. That was a good song that he wrote.
Hmm.
And Living Like a Man. Let's play that one.
Really, I mean, you know, you say you got brothers look alike. I look a little like my brother. You really look like your brother.
He looks like me, actually. I'm the older brother.
But no, you look younger.
You think so?
Don't tell him.
I won't tell him. You're a scrappy fellow. You don't look as tall.
I end up looking like a 5-foot dwarf.
I know.
So how long have you been playing music? Your whole life?
Yeah.
And in a musical family, obviously. Yeah. Have you and Michael ever collaborated and worked together?
Yeah, I've recorded on 3 labels with Michael, and I managed Michael when I returned from India, got him a deal with RCA Records, which is his first record company. And we opened up for Bob Seger. We did a national tour, and I set up his fan base. And we've had a strong music business experience together, and we've collaborated in writing songs and singing and harmonies. We phrase a lot alike. But he's an incredibly gifted individual.
As you are.
Oh, I appreciate that very much.
And siblings?
I have a sister in between us.
In between.
Yes.
Is she musical?
Of course, yeah.
Oh, that's
right. She plays clarinet.
All right. So you're going to be performing what song for us today?
The title song, Living Like a Man.
Living Like a Man off of Oren Bolton.
Right. My mother does that all the time.
My mother calls me Jeff, and I'm Scott. So
right.
Please, it's called Living Like a Man. Give me a nice round of applause.
actually,
no?
No,
he's been on the state. Yeah.
It's good that he's still recording, and
yeah.
He's a great song. I like the songs that he writes a lot.
Yeah, he's good. So anyway, there's a couple of things I want to hang on one second.
How about the Handbook of Human Ownership, a manual for new tax farmers?
I don't know about that one.
I don't know. I didn't get a chance to play it, so I don't really know.
Gene splice BT insecticide GMO corn pollen kills monarch butterflies.
Oh.
And glyphosate is wiping out the milkweed on which they depend. Boycott GMOs, boycott Roundup, boycott Monsanto. And you know, this is the ultimate hypocrisy of this goddamn Obama administration. Anyway. They won't ban GMOs. You know?
No.
And this bitch, Miss Obama, is running around all over the place telling everybody eat organic, and yet she won't protest the fact that her husband just made the president or vice president of Monsanto the FDA director. I mean, you know, come on, who the hell is kidding who here?
How about this? New world disorder, global unrest, and American leadership.
Global unrest and U.S. American leadership. Go ahead. Why not? We only got a few minutes left.
It's buffering, folks. It takes a minute.
President Obama wanted me to come personally to make it clear what you already know, that under Article 5 of the NATO Treaty, we will respond. We will respond to any aggression against the NATO ally.
Vice President Joe Biden in Lithuania this week reassuring our Eastern European allies that the United States stands with them in the face of Russian aggression. So just how confident should they be? We're back with Matt Kaminsky, Wall Street Journal columnist and deputy editor Dan Henninger, and foreign affairs columnist Brett Stevens also joins us. So Brett, let's step back a bit, kind of bigger picture. How significant an event for European security and American security is this territorial acquisition, the first since, I think, the end of World War II by Vladimir Putin?
It's the most significant event in European security since 1991, since the collapse of the Soviet Union, far more significant than the very bloody events in the Balkans in the 1990s when Yugoslavia was breaking up into several pieces. Because this is a great power confrontation. This is not a question of small, out-of-the-way countries with insubstantial armies killing one another. This is the revival of Russia as a major power trying to make a play in a strategically vital region of the world. The Crimea is Russia's, historically, its access to warm water ports. There's a great deal of oil in the Black Sea. And it raises very significant issues, which you heard Joe Biden allude to, about other post-Soviet states like the Baltic states, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, that are now members of NATO and which we are obliged to defend. What do you think Putin's goal is? Putin's ultimate goal is to reconstitute as much of the old Soviet Union as he can, minus state planning of the economy and all the encumbrances of communism. Putin sees himself as a new Russian czar with designs on the European continent as a major Eurasian player. And whether we stop him now or forcefully counteract what he's done is going to have an effect going forward, not for years, but for decades, Paul.
You know, Matt, there's an argument out there. You hear it from Russia, but you also hear from some Americans that the cause of this is actually Russian insecurity, that we've caused this because we've expanded NATO not from the border of Germany to Poland to the Baltic states, and therefore we gave Russia this sense that it's surrounded. Is that at all true?
I think blaming ourselves is only sort of says something about us, that we want to excuse Vladimir Putin's misbehavior as we have over the years. I mean, the bottom line is that Vladimir Putin is doing what he's doing for all those reasons, but also because of his own insecurity. He's terrified about what happened in Ukraine and the fact that a country very similar to his might become a democracy. His economy is slowing down dramatically. He needs a distraction
from inevitable sort of trouble in Russia itself. And I think that's also why he's moving against Ukraine and trying to sort of gin up this sort of nationalism. But more broadly, NATO did not expand to Ukraine. Remember that 5 years ago, we denied Georgia and Ukraine a very simple first step into NATO. Since then, Vladimir Putin's invaded Georgia and invaded Ukraine. Our weakness has been an invitation to his aggression.
On that point, Dan, you've been very tough on the president and his leadership, failed leadership, and yet some of the liberals would come back at you and say, hey, look, this isn't nothing about Obama. This is Putin. Why blame anything having to do with Barack Obama for Putin's aggression? What's your point about Obama and American leadership may perhaps having invited this?
Well, I think that Putin has been sitting there watching America's president behave in areas like Syria when he declined to bomb Assad's airfields, and decided if we were going to pull back, and it's part of Obama's ideology for the United States to kind of go alongside international institutions, he would test it. He would move forward. And he's done that now. And I think he's not only done this, he's thrown down the gauntlet to the leadership in the West. It's not only the Western Europeans, but it's the United States. And the Western Europeans have made it, I think have been making it pretty clear that although they would do some economic damage to themselves if they proceed with sanctions against the Russians, some of their leaders, Angela Merkel especially, have made it clear they would be willing to do it if there would be, so to speak, burden sharing on taking a hit. This is not going to happen, though, Paul, unless the President of the United States gets out front of the Europeans and leads them in that direction. And so far, Obama has not done that.
You know, Paul, people ask, what does Syria have to do with Ukraine? And, you know, there's no causal relationship. I would disagree. I think the relationship is environmental. Remember the broken windows theory of policing? When people see disorder at the kind of surface level, it creates deeper disorders. And that's precisely what's happening now. China's aggression in the South China Sea, the collapse of the Syrian state and the civil war taking place there, the capitulation with the negotiations with Iran, all of this is creating an environment of global disorder that is an invitation to revanchist states that want to revise the global order to take advantage of what is clearly Western indecision, weakness, and a desire to retreat
over
responsibility.
You have almost 3 years left in this president's term.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think he's absolutely right. I think Obama's a weak link. I think Putin has taken advantage of that. And, you know, there's not a damn thing he can do about it. And he's got to, you know, buck it up.
But when they talk about global order, I mean, what global order? The order that we created?
Anyway, who cares? I mean, the whole thing's going to wind up, you know, an issue anyway. And we may wind up in bigger problems than we ever had. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But anyway, we want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. We've got about a minute or so left. And
there's certainly a lot going on in the world.
Oh, God, yeah. There's tons of things going on. And it's just, you know, there's nothing you can really do about it. And, you know, we try, and we bring this stuff up. And, you know, we get censored, we get banged, we get, you know, minimalized. And that's the way it is. But, you know, we brought stuff up, and that's how it is, you know. So, anyway, I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And we hope you join us tomorrow night when we have our good friend, hopefully we have our good friend Larry Dorman joining us.
Oh, I hope so.
And, you know, we'll be talking about Yemen issues. And
remember, folks, Larry is the public affairs coordinator for
AFSCME,
Council for out of New Britain, Connecticut.
Yeah. So we'll be having a good time. Hope you had a good night, and wish you well.
Yes, good night, folks. And thank you for listening in. We hope you join us tomorrow. Have a good evening, folks. Yeah.